Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Jamie Floyd in for Brian Lehrer on WNYC and WNYC.org. As the quickly spreading joy of the Arab Spring turns into the slog of Arab summer, we'll check in now on two stories coming out of the Middle East. In a bit, Steve Clemens of the New America Foundation will join us to talk about the war in Libya. You've been hearing in the news about how the U.S. is offering more and more support to the rebels, including sending in unmanned drones. But right now, we turn to Syria, where large protests are planned for today. And as you've been hearing, the Assad government firing upon the crowds there. Tara Bahrampour has been covering the events for The Washington Post. She is now in Beirut, Lebanon. Tara, welcome to WNYC. Can you hear me, Tara?
I can hear you. Can you hear me?
Yes, we can. We're going to stick with your line for as long as we can. What is the latest on the violence in the streets there?
The latest is that in several towns and cities today, government troops had amassed tanks and security forces, and when people came out of Friday prayers and started demonstrating, they began shooting on several of the crowds, in some places into the crowds, in other places into the air. And so far, 10 people have been reported killed.
10 people reported killed, and do we have any numbers on injuries?
We don't. We're hearing from activists there and outside of Syria that there are many injured. People were also beaten with batons, and there was tear gas in some places, but we don't have a number for the injured.
And is there any official statement or report from the government in the wake of this last violence?
So far, from what I have seen, the government has announced reforms that included a lifting of the emergency laws, which was formally signed yesterday by the president. And those emergency laws had banned such protests. At the same time, they instated new rules regulating protests and saying that people needed permission, meaning that the protests today are still illegal. Up until now, the president has been saying that the protesters are Islamists, are criminals. They have been trying to say that foreign agents have been involved. They're trying to portray it as not a grassroots Syrian movement. And opposition members dispute that.
The Assad government, Tara, claims it is making reforms such as abolishing the state security courts and other reforms, in addition to the lifting of this state of emergency. It seems that the protesters do not see that as at all meaningful, given the events of today.
That's right. In the beginning, last month, the protesters were actually asking for these reforms, and that includes the lifting of the laws and also giving rights to the Kurdish minority, giving citizenship to them and so on. But now their demands have increased, and they are now asking, in many cases, for the toppling of the regime itself. So they feel like this is too little too late, and they don't believe that the Assad government is credible at this point because they feel they have been promised things in the past and that these are not meaningful reforms.
Is it still possible, Tara, to give us a breakdown of support within Syria? Assad had been reported to still have very powerful allies and a big chunk of support among the population. Is that still the case?
Assad has been more popular in Syria than leaders in Egypt and Tunisia had been, and there has been genuine support for him. It's hard to tell right now the percentages of people supporting him. Certainly, the percentages of the protesters out in the street is a smaller percentage, still a minority. But it's impossible to say whether the people who are staying away because they support him, or because they are afraid of reprisals, or because they are afraid that something worse could follow if there is no Assad regime.
All right. We're going to get you back to your reporting there in Beirut, Lebanon. That's Tara Bahrampour, who covers events for The Washington Post. Thank you very much for your report here on WNYC. I'm Jamie Floyd, in for Brian Lehrer. And we turn now to Libya. And we're going to be joined by Steve Clemens. He's the director of the American Strategy Program at the New America Foundation and the man behind The Washington Note. Steve, thank you very much for joining us.
Good to be with you.
And let's switch then to Libya. And let's talk then about the U.S. intervention there, the stated goal of which was to protect the civilian population, not directly oust Gaddafi, but two developments in the last half of this week. One, we heard that the U.S. is deploying Predator drones to strike at Gaddafi's forces. And two, now Britain and France are providing military advisors, while the U.S. is supplying funds to equip rebels with uniforms, body armor, vehicles. So what say you, Steve? Mission creep?
Well, I think, if not mission creep, I think it was an underestimation of how durable Gaddafi might be. To some degree, President Obama's very understandable effort to try and protect those people in Benghazi when Gaddafi's forces had surrounded, and, you know, he was on TV waving his arms saying that, you know, there would essentially be a horrific price paid by those who had opposed him. You know, one wonders if we still would have invaded if Gaddafi had not had been more circumspect in his comments and still had done horrible things. But in any case, I think that the White House and the allies and the French and British in this had hoped originally that the kind of force they could throw in a very focused early period of time would knock Gaddafi off balance and create enough space for the opposition to win and roll against him in a definitive way. And that has proven not to be the case. And so what we see now is a doubling down. Mm-hmm. We're not quite at the point where the United States in any way, and President Obama said absolutely no ground troops, but we're reaching the limits, it seems, of our ability to affect some of the circumstances on the ground. And so the French and British are going to pick up some of those roles. So and I just must say one other thing.
Please.
I mean, on the U.S. side, there's no doubt that President Obama and Hillary Clinton have said it is U.S. policy that there's no future government without Gaddafi, and that now is a regime change mission as far as the United States is concerned. But there's a bit of a sleight of hand and sort of a shell game that under the United Nations resolution, Security Council resolution, regime change is not part of that. And Hillary Clinton has been careful to say that we are operating under that UN Council resolution. So there's a bit of statecraft going on here, holding out the hope, I think, that Gaddafi will at least, you know, see where things are going and eventually note that there's still a backdoor exit for him that would preclude other measures. Now, that's a gamble, and the really interesting gamble is the longer Gaddafi survives, and this is my big worry right now, the longer he demonstrates that there's a durability, that the opposition simply isn't up to the task, and there are limits on what the Western forces will do, mm-hmm. I think you're going to see something happening, which is going to be very hard for us to see, which is what happened after Tiananmen in China, when the United States went back and had to put U.S.-China relations back on a relatively constructive course. And I think you'll see countries like Brazil, India, Turkey, who see Libya in ways different than we do, begin opening thoroughfares and access and you know, begin deal-making with Gaddafi again. Mm-hmm. That's what's coming if this doesn't get solved soon.
Yeah. On this point of the mission, you wrote yesterday that France and England don't perhaps share the same degree of commitment to this mission as the U.S. does. And in the run-up to the war, the Obama administration was very careful to make this distinction between the U.S. having a, quote, interest in Libya versus a, quote, vital interest, unquote. But here's Secretary Clinton on Meet the Press 3 weeks ago.
When it comes to Libya, we started hearing from the UK, France, Italy, other of our NATO allies. This was in their vital national interest.
So the administration has been saying that France got us into this conflict. Are you now saying, Steve, that the U.S. has been the primary driver of this coalition all along?
Well, no, I wouldn't say it. I don't think it's one or the other. There's no doubt that Nicolas Sarkozy and his foreign minister were the ones to really kick the tripwire for a lot of the action we've seen. They were the first to recognize the legitimacy of the Libyan Opposition Council as the head of government, as the real government there. Many other nations have not followed suit, including the United States. But I think that our force capacity and our early role in helping to be the systems integrator and organizer of the assault, even though the French led, and I do give President Obama some credit, even though I think this Libya situation is a real big mess, and I've been worried about it from the beginning becoming a slippery slope to a very different kind of engagement that we were prepared as a nation for, and something that could be incredibly disruptive to NATO. I've been calling it NATO's stretch marks, because NATO is already deeply concerned and ambivalent about what has happened in Afghanistan. Mm-hmm. And now we've added another out-of-area mission that has its own complexity. And so, to some degree, the United States has been playing a key lead and then turned over the keys for the lead to NATO more formally. And it's interesting that the efficacy of that since then has been controversial, that there just hasn't been that much progress. And now it seems that with the armed drone commitment that President Obama made yesterday, mm-hmm. that Bob Gates, you know, communicated, this is America getting reengaged, pretty deeply reengaged.
I'm Jamie Floyd, in for Brian Lehrer. My guest is Steve Clements. He's the director of the American Strategy Program at the New America Foundation and the man behind the Washington Note. So, Steve, exactly what is the goal of the drone strikes? You know, there's what they tell us, and then there's, well, I guess we can assume what they tell us is reality, but there's what they tell us, and then there's the real goal. What do you think?
I think the drone strikes are designed to do what they have been trying to do in Afghanistan and the western areas of Pakistan, essentially is trying to disrupt military capacity, planning capacity, command staff controls, and not do this with boots on the ground. But
right.
It is definitely an escalation.
And you've been very outspoken as a critic of the use of drones in Afghanistan. Do you have the same concern in Libya?
Well, I do. And one of the big challenges in Libya is that Benghazi and what originally brought us in terms of a mission of protecting the people, again, which I understand, is that the dynamics of bombing and of intervening against those rolling tanks and other capacity that Gaddafi was bringing in was easy. It was geographically easier than what we've seen in Misrata and others, where the role that coalition forces could play has been much more limited, that the Gaddafi and civilian forces and opposition forces have been much more intermingled. And so the chances run much higher when you have unmanned drones, and I think you have questionable on-the-ground intelligence. One of the things that makes, I mean, we have a lot of innocents that have been killed by drones in Afghanistan, but one of the things that's been a vital part of getting any of this right is having in Afghanistan various CIA intelligence capacity constantly picking up intelligence to try to focus those drone attacks in a way that hit their targets and don't hit, you know, women, children, other civilians, where that hit rate of other civilians has been unbelievably high. We've hit, you know, and I think that when you look at Libya is about 100 times, in my view, more complex at the moment than Afghanistan, because we don't have all those intel officers on the ground. We don't have networks set up. And now you're going to bring in a powerful capacity that I think will inevitably create hardship and get us engaged in something that where a lot of innocent people die. And I just feel that this can lead to the kind of thing that I worry about. And the bottom line is the cameras, in my view, have come off the capacity and hope of very brave and inspiring protesters who want a different future. And it's now on what the West is doing and not doing. And it becomes our story. We own the civil war in Libya, not the Libyans. And that is in my view, has been a fundamental mistake, and that our footprint in the outcome of Libya is too high and will create its own blowback, will create its own delegitimation of even those partners we're trying to help. And I think there's not enough discussion of that, not enough discussion of what the narrative about Western intervention is in the broad Middle East, even though in this moment there may seem to be a consensus of support. We're not doing the kinds of things that move carefully, realizing that we're in dangerous territory ourselves, yeah, with our own image and brand in that region.
I recommend that more of our leaders and certainly our listeners read your column, Steve Clemens. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Great
for
to be
joining
with you.
Us. I'm Jamie Floyd in for Brian Lehrer. And coming up after the break, a conversation about graduation rates in New York City schools. Teachers and administrators, you can start calling in now, 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692. What does it take to improve graduation rates? Give us a call, 212-433-9692. We'll be right back.